Welcome to the Everesting Podcast, built by Corey. Happy New Year, everybody. This is our first episode of 2023, and in the spirit of planning 2023 adventures, I wanted to dedicate an episode to the Everesting Rome. Because the new Hall of Fame has been updated, it's incredible. I've spent a whole bunch of time deep diving different potential podcast topics, and one of the ones that really stood out to me is the Everesting Rome, what it is, how it works, and how few people have actually completed one out of what is now a very large number of people who've had entries into the Hall of Fame. Very few of them are Romes because they're difficult to plan and it's a much more complex puzzle than simply just going up and down a single hill repeatedly. So I wanted to have somebody co-host this episode with me, and I reached out to the best person I could think of to do so, which was Sir Guy Lightspeed. His name is Guy Townsend. He's been a guest on the podcast before. He helped me record the 10 steps to Everesting. And this is just a really, really fun conversation about how a Rome works. But most importantly, what I want to do is reach out to the community and have people share with us how your Rome was planned. So if you've completed one, how did you plan your route? How did you work it out? Like, even from a technical standpoint, did you use Google Maps? Those types of things. Love to hear from people on this. Even if you haven't completed a route, but you have one in mind, we'd love to hear that too. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the State Bicycle Company, who you can find at statebicycle.com. As I always tell you, they have all kinds of awesome stuff, both from apparel, merchandise, and of course, bicycles. So visit them at statebicycle.com or give them a follow on social media. Great way to stay tuned into what they are doing. This episode will also be published on our YouTube channel, so if you can subscribe there, that helps us grow. Thanks for tuning in, and on to the Everesting Rome. Okay, so I am rejoined by Sir Guy Lightspeed, Guy Townsend, who has graciously donated some more of his time to the podcast. You joined me early days of the podcast when we were just starting out. I think we pre-recorded a few episodes about preparing for an Everesting, because you had created a super great resource, and that's how Andy Van Bergen introduced us. And that's right. Since then, I've been following along with all of your exploits on the bike, and it's, you know, I consider you a friend now, even though we haven't met in person.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do an episode of the Everesting podcast dedicated completely to the Everesting Rome, what it is, how to put it together, and then have some of the community, hopefully towards the end of this, we can tie it into where people can share how they plan theirs. And maybe even, I almost feel like there could be some pre-established routes, because it's so hard to figure out how to do it, depending on where you are in the world. And maybe there's a way that we can create a resource where people can even share Rome routes, right?
Yeah, and actually, I don't know if it's been, so I've only ridden one, well, this is not true, we'll come back to this, but I've only ridden one official Rome. I did it on a place called Exmoor in the UK, which is a small upland area in the southwest of England. But it's got thousands of roads, really small roads, and it is relentlessly hilly. It's just brutally hilly. There is no flat road. But the truth is, for Rome, that's exactly what you want. But the funny thing is, I tried plotting Rome, I think, three times elsewhere in the UK, actually mainly in Wales, which in theory, you know, mountainous, you would think Rome would be easier to achieve in Wales. And I actually couldn't get enough vertical into a short enough distance such that I'd be able to achieve it.
That's exactly the challenge, right? So let's start one step backward and explain what a Rome is.
Yeah, so Rome,
I'll take it away, because you're very familiar with this.
Yeah, so I'm going to remind everybody what Everesting is, which is no time limit, repeats ascents and descents of a chosen hill or segment, no sleep allowed, and you've got to hit 8848 meters. Now, Rome's actually different, but I love the simplicity still, in that you've got to hit 10,000 meters in 36 hours elapsed time. It's up to you how much you sleep or don't, but 36 hours elapsed time. And you've got to do a minimum of 400K. And I wish I mean, those rules are now so established. I mean, they were established almost right from the start, because in fact, I think Rome is almost what Andy and his friends in Hell's 500 were doing before Everesting.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly how that came to be, really. I think they called it 5 wide and 10 deep or something like that. I think that was correctly, but they tried to do 500K and 10,000 meters over a weekend.
Over a weekend, exactly right, which is, you know, there's your 36 hours, basically. You know, get up at 7 a.m. on the Saturday, or roll out at 7 a.m. on the Saturday, finish at 7 p.m. on the Sunday. I mean, it's just beautifully simple. But I wish there was one other rule, which is no repeats.
Right. Okay, good point. So that's exactly what has dissuaded me from doing it so far, because I can't locally plan a route that doesn't require me to do piles of repeats, or splitting up repeats amongst multiple hills, which just doesn't sound, it sounds like a really difficult physical challenge, but it doesn't sound like it doesn't satisfy the element of sort of wanderlust that I think could be so magical about the challenge, right?
Yeah. And it clearly it depends how good you are and fast you are as a climber, because a quick rider, you know, somebody who might Everest in 10 to 12 hours, let's say, that rider could go a lot further distance wise and still get their 10,000 meters.
Right.
Whereas I know that I need to get my 10,000 meters in probably no more than 500K, or else I'm definitely pushing time. And as I say, I've only officially ridden one, but of my 36 hours elapsed, I slept for six. It's a total luxury. Slept for six. So actually, I felt pretty good on day two. I front loaded day one, but still felt pretty good on day two. And I finished with about an hour in hand. My route was 440K. But the first couple of times I plotted it, or first two or three times I plotted it in Wales, which in theory I thought would give me the vertical more easily, I was always just too far in terms of distance. I was up around 650K, and I knew that I just couldn't do that. And I knew some stronger riders actually who had tried it elsewhere in the UK and failed just because the distance was too great.
And a distance that sounds like you could certainly ride it within that time parameter, if it was flatter, but you just can't.
You know, I've ridden, you know, more than 440K in 36 hours, you could go a very long way. But you know, if it was a distance challenge, you would just go for the flattest place possible and find a very big tailwind.
Exactly.
But Rome is just completely different. I think that you made a really good point, Pete, which it really depends where you live. I think if you live in the big mountains, particularly if it's irrespective of the fact you are allowed repeats technically, but if you apply my sort of other rule of no repeats, Rome becomes much more feasible if you live in the big mountains, because by and large, particularly, you know, if I think of some of the really famous routes in the Pyrenees or the Alps or the Dolomites, providing you avoid those long valley transfer sections, you're pretty much only ever going up or down. Right. And my mantra for Rome, when I rode my first one, I literally, flat road is my enemy. That was my mantra, no flat road. Because that just achieves nothing. Although I guess it achieves your distance, but the bottom line is you really want to be either climbing or descending and not doing anything else.
Right, to keep the distance.
Yes, because I think, you know, the distance actually in 36 hours is not the challenge. The challenge is the vertical.
So to me, in my mind, the ideal state would be a loop. And then the second best, in my opinion, would be an out and back that would achieve it. And then the third best, repeats, right? Yeah. Those are really three ways to do it, I think.
Yeah, or maybe if you had the luxury of riding point to point, there are
great point.
You'd really have to work your route out, but you know, there are definitely places where I think you could probably get it riding point to point.
And then you have more logistics to sort out.
Exactly right. Yeah, and that's harder. So you know, when I did, I mean, a loop would be brilliant, but again, there's some logistics in there. You sort of, you know, are you adding in some bike packing if you're going to sleep at all? I would have found it tough to have no sleep. I don't really like riding through the night and then going again the next day. You know, most of the people I know that have attempted Rome have had pretty minimal sleep. I knew that I could get enough vertical in day one and probably in day two and get a decent sleep in the middle.
I think 4 to 6 hours is achievable for most people speed wise if they had the right rope, right? That's correct. The key.
Yeah. And it so outside of the big mountains, certainly in the UK, I think there are two places that are relentlessly hilly enough and where the hills are steep enough such that it works. And I've got those two routes plotted. I've ridden one on Exmoor. And to your point, right at the start, somebody contacted me subsequently and said, can I use your route?
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. And what I haven't done, I should check back through the emails to see whether he did do it. But he'd found my blog about Everesting on Exmoor, Everesting Rome on Exmoor. And I think he'd sort of gone, he probably a bit like me at the start. He tried to map it in a bunch of places, couldn't get the vertical in a distance that he thought he could ride in that time, and hence contacted me and said, can I use your route?
Just from a technical standpoint, how were you plotting this out? Was this a combination of Strava and Google Maps, or was it really just Google
Maps?
Yeah,
I think I did it on, so you're right, that's a really good point, because clearly if you do it in the big mountains, you could, you know, if let's say you've got 10 climbs and you know that each one is 1,000 meters of ascent, super easy to plot this. But in somewhere in the UK, for example, where all the intermediate, none of the climbs are known for their height ascent.
Right.
So I used both, so I plotted it on Strava and then I plotted it on Ride with GPS.
Okay.
And my route gave me 10,400 meters of ascent. And I knew that I had the option to throw in some extra climbs because there were just these roads everywhere.
And I did
have a route. I knew that it would in theory give me the ascent. Now what I then had is I had really heavy sea fog, so my route was coastal.
Okay.
And two sides of this moor are basically coastal, and I had a really good forecast. I thought I was in for a kind of nice warm summer ride. And I had really heavy sea fog both days, so it's basically like riding in fine rain. So my vertical wasn't working on my Garmin.
Oh no!
Yeah, super stressful. So I knew that if I stuck to the route, I was fine. But even so, you know, my Garmin was ticking over at about, I was getting about 1 meter recorded for every 3 meters climbed.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So mentally. Stressful.
In case you took a wrong turn or something, and
yeah, and I actually I remember I took a short break to have some food in one of the lower places, and my son Tom, who rides as well, was back at base, and I explained that I wasn't getting any of my vertical, and he basically recalculated again to make sure that, relax, you're fine, I agree, your route gives you that. So in fact, I rode from 7 a.m. to about 10 p.m. on day one and got 6,400 meters of vertical.
So you must have felt at it in the bag as long as you
can keep them. Yeah, the truth is I'm not very quick, but I've always been really good at overnight recovery. So I don't know whether you've ever come across them or whether you may even have done a podcast about them, but have you heard of the Salt Coles Challenge?
No, okay, but I am aware of it though, yes.
Yeah, so it's basically 10 days of riding. It tends to be 10 to 12 hours in the saddle each day, and a typical day is between 4,000 and 5,000 meters of vertical and about 200K. And the idea being you get 100 coals in those 10 days. And I've ridden a few of those. So actually this concept of getting up on day two and day three, four, five, etc. But getting up on day two and going again big is something I've just done a lot of. So I knew that if I could front load that first day, then I think I went about 240K in the first day and then 200K and 3,600 in the second day. And that was it. So yeah, for me, it was all about, could I do it in 36 hours?
Right.
And still get some sort of decent sleep.
The way I look at it is every time you add a kilometer of flat road, you're taking away a few minutes of sleep that you could have.
Yeah. Right?
Essentially, yeah. What you're trading, because once you start, if you get to 600 something, there's no way you can sleep. I think for a typical professional.
Exactly right. I think if you're a normal rider, let's say you're going around for somewhere between 20 to 25 kilometers an hour on this thing, and that even that would be good over 2 days.
Sure.
Then you're up against the clock, and therefore hence why for me, and I think for most people, you've got to keep the distance manageable. I think it's between 400 and 500K. I think over 500K, I think you're going to start to struggle. But therefore, you want to get the vertical, pretty efficiently. So actually, I've done one in the UK on Exmoor, which is just savagely steep everywhere. and I avoided a couple of the absolute worst climbs, which are kind of 30% plus, but I did a whole bunch of stuff that was 15 to 25.
So it was adding up quickly.
So hence I could get 10,000, 400 meters in 440K.
And did you do a loop?
Actually what I did was, I'm lucky enough to have a house on the edge of the moor. It's literally at sea level. So the beach is like 50 meters away. So what I did was, it's really remote. There are very few places to refuel up on the moor. So the night before, I drove out to the one place where my route kept intersecting, as I basically just did all these little loops. And I it's really remote up there. So, and I drove up there at night and it was dark. And I basically had a cool box full of water, food, and my lights, spare lights. And I just put it behind a stone wall.
I've hidden things in the woods.
Yeah. It's an hour and a half drive from here to the top of the moor. So actually it was quite an effort to do that. And I knew that I'd then got to go back and get it afterwards. So it was quite an effort, but I just had this thing stacked full of food, water, and loads of spare lights. Oh, and inner tubes and stuff that I thought I might, because actually I did puncture twice because the weather was so bad.
So your route was really more of, I'd love to see the Strava file.
It's literally it's just all over the place. So what I basically did was I rode from the house on the coast out onto the moor, and I just kept crisscrossing the moor using all these different roads, and using that refuel. I think I used it three times on day one and twice on day two, but I avoided repeats, so I would come up different hills and down different hills and so on. And then, so end of day one, I came back to the house, and then start of day two, left the house again, did another loop. So in effect, I did two loops from one base. If you looked at the Strava file, it wouldn't look like that, but that's what I basically did. I did two loops.
Okay. And then another technical question. Was it two separate rides on Strava that you recorded and then sent?
I think there might be, nowadays actually, the tech and Hells 500's ability to check the tech has become so good that they're much more relaxed about this. But when Rome first existed, the idea was that you would upload it as a single file. So what I did was I ran two Garmins because I didn't want one to fail. And actually, given the weather, one could fail. So I ran two Garmins, and all I did was I just paused them, took them off the bike at the end of day one, and put them on charge. And then the next morning, put them back on the bike, unpaused them, rolled away, checked they were working, and off I went. So it was
recording elapsed time while it was on.
Exactly right. So so in fact, if you check my Strava file, it was August 2018. my Strava profile is open, so anybody can see it. And you'll see it's elapsed time. It'll say something like 35 hours moving or elapsed. It's nice to have that there as one ride. I know it's got a sleep in it, but it's a nice system.
It's nice if you can. And the reason that I ask is because I see these types of questions come up repeatedly in like the Facebook group of people like, well, okay, so now I'm ready to do this thing. Make it happen so that when I get over to Everesting, that it's real, right? And I mentioned before we go on, there's now, I'm looking at it right now, 23,671 successful Everestings in the Hall of Fame. That includes includes Virch. That's everything. It is I don't have the exact number, but it is a very small number of Romes. Like I think it might only be a few hundred, including virtual ones.
Yeah, so it's funny actually. I mean, I do still have a couple of things that I want to Everest. And actually, funny enough, I've started really just as a bit of a kind of training thing, but I've actually started getting quite into half Everestings because they don't need any particular prep, and it means that you can just, you know, you can go anywhere and probably tick that off. So I've become quite into those actually, but Rome is still my favorite. I think it's, you know, it's the one that's going to feel most like a normal bike ride.
Yes.
But it's also the one that I think requires most planning because it's so hard to get that much vertical into a manageable distance within that time frame. So I actually think Rome, not that Everesting is easy, but at least it's simple. Pick a hill, don't sleep, keep going until you hit the vertical. That's actually pretty straightforward. Whereas, you know, if you say to most people, give me a route that gets you 10,000 meters within 36 hours, and must be more than 400k long, most people are really going to struggle unless they just, you know, they happen to live in a big mountain range and it's right on their doorstep. Particularly if you apply my no repeats ideal.
Exactly. Now I do, what the caveat to that I think is, if you're doing either a loop, a point to point, or an out and back, if along that way there was a great climb that you could get up and down and continue on your route, I think that's acceptable.
I think that's fine because that's not a repeat. That's an out and back. So that's absolutely fine.
Yeah. So it can have tree branches in order to start piling on the vertical, right?
Yeah. So I think that's absolutely, in fact, I may even have had some out and backs on mine where I wanted to go a different direction, but I really wanted the vertical from that particular climb.
Right. Like, there's a quick 200 meters there. I bet. Yeah.
Well, and that is, I mean, that's the other thing I really like about Rome is it's back to this, you know, flat road is your enemy. And you're just relentlessly seeking vertical. And it's, that's very funny. It's not what you normally do.
No, not at all. It's not what our instinct is, though.
It's not a normal bike ride.
Yeah, over something, right? And I'm going to say it publicly now. I've been debating in my head whether I should or not, but I've been bugging Andy that I think the community could use a half Rome. I think that would be a real spot. And now I've made it public, so maybe people can shoot Andy an email in support of that.
What time? I think that has to be a continuous effort. No sleep allowed. I think that's
18 hours at 5,000 meters, right?
Yeah. And that's, I mean, the truth is you're not going to, in most places, you won't need that 18 hours because that you're basically, what you've just described is a Son Coles day.
So those days exist.
Absolutely. Well, and the reason that I said, I'll let you into, I'll explain that comment when I said I've done one official Rome. So back in 2014, I read a thing called the Son Coles Dolomites, which was 10 days and it was 52,000 meters of climbing in those 10 days.
Ooh.
Yeah. And what I basically roll out 7 a.m. most mornings. And I, because I was one of the slower riders, I was definitely, you know, 12 hours on the road each day. But I don't think any of those days were less than 5,000 meters, and some of them were over 6. And what I worked out afterwards was that I had probably ticked off 4 or 5 Romes.
Depending on when you...
Yeah. And I never bothered to go back and really work it out. I have all the Strava files exist, so in theory I could, but I think when I did that, Rome hadn't been talked about, so I didn't know about it. Everesting was only just breaking in 2014. Yeah,
that's in its early days.
And I sort of decided that I shouldn't get a Rome because I happened to have done one previously. It a bit like George Mallory saying, you know, once it was official, I had to go and do it again.
Right.
So this was, I sort of went, forget the fact that I think I've probably done a bunch of them during that event. I'll go and plot it. And actually it was fun to plot it somewhere outside of the big mountains because I realized just how difficult it was.
Yeah. And I really do. I am a self-professed map nerd. I love this part, which I think is really, I loved that part of Everesting. And I think a lot love that part of Everesting. So I do want to make a mass call to the audience of this podcast and Everesting that if you have a cool Rome route, whether you've cycled it or not, if you've cycled it, even better. But if you have a cool Rome route that doesn't involve repeats, again, not to take anything away from anybody who's done one with it's the challenge is immense, but to me, the real appeal is to avoid it exactly like you. Yeah. So I'd love to hear what parts of the world does this work in. I don't believe that, and another more specific challenge is if anybody can find one anywhere around Calgary, Alberta that works, I'm all ears because I don't think that it's achievable. And I've spent many hours trying to figure it out.
Yeah, so I've read some, so because of the Everesting guide that I wrote, I get quite a lot of inbound emails from people I don't know saying, can you help me with this? Right. And I had one actually from a guy, I can't remember his surname, but a guy called Paul, I think he's a Brit, who he was asking me questions about the Bonnet area down in the Cochin Alps of southern France.
Which you know really well.
Which I know really well because I Everested the Bonnet. And I've ridden in that area a lot. But he, very cool, he had worked out a Rome route on which had some mountain banks on some of the ski stations. But from the best of my memory, it didn't have any repeats. And it was a Rome route based around the Bonnet area, which he did achieve. I know that that's definitely in the Hall of Fame. So there's one route that definitely exists. I think it's in the Hall of Fame, so it must be kosher. But there is a somebody Everested it. They did a Rome in London,
within the city limits.
Yeah, because North London
without repeats.
Well, I don't know. I'd have to check, but it is in the Hall of Fame somewhere.
Amazing.
I saw this pop up. I think possibly they didn't have repeats, or they didn't have many, because North London is actually relentlessly hilly. So within the M25, this big circular motorway that goes around the city, it's actually really hilly. And I, this was a good few years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, because it really piqued my interest, and it up popped to Rome in London.
Wow. See, there's a whole side of this that I find completely fascinating, that people are able to put this together. It's a very, very difficult thing to find 10,000 km. Oh, and I should also mention, we've really only been talking about this in the context of road cycling, but this obviously could be achieved on a mountain bike or on a gravel bike as well. Yeah. And maybe in my part of the world, gravel might be the way to have to put it together, because we do have a lot of out and back branches that you could do to things like fire lookouts, because we just don't pick roads.
So that's interesting. I guess your challenge there will be whether you can be fast enough to get the distance once you take things off road. So having, I've Everested off road a couple of times, and you know, they are, even if you're on a good day and you've got just the right track, they were 2 or 3 hours longer than my road Everesting.
Oh, good point. Good point. So, that really might push people to.
And so in theory, it probably comes back to if you were quick enough, actually, yes, you probably could. Whether you could find, I mean, I really like the whole gravel thing, and you know, I rode GB Divide this year and so on, and that's quite hilly. But the truth is, there's an awful lot of transfer between the gravel climbs. Okay. So, yeah, you'd have to, you know, in the middle of Wales. Yeah, I think I could probably get the vertical. I'm not sure that the distance. Well, actually, I'm not sure I'd be quick enough to be the time gap. You've now piqued my interest, actually. Because I can think of a place where, yeah, it is just relentless. It's actually where both my gravel Everestings have been. That area has a lot of climbs. But whether I could, you know, if my average speed drops to 18, 20 kilometers an hour.
Right. Now, also, I guess, depending on your appetite for sorting out logistics, there is no rules to prevent somebody from switching bikes or from doing something mixed surface with the right type of bike.
Yeah.
Right. Good. We're talking about 2 days. So you could front load your first day on the road, really. And this is exactly why Andy makes these challenges. So people think about these things, right? Is what you could do. Right? What could I do? So you could do a giant road day. And second day of gravel after a 5 hours of sleep, right?
Yeah, you could. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah,
that might be a very cool way to, you know, if you were trying to plan this in an area where you couldn't join two sections of road, but hey, there's a gravel link, or, you know, it might be something like that. You know, if you were doing this based in northern Italy and you have the Finestra, for example, I know everybody rides it on a road bike, but it's not very friendly for a road bike. And there are other gravel climbs in that area. The Bonnet, for example, there are two other ways up it that are gravel.
Okay. So this is what we're going to put out to people. Where have you done a Rome? How did you put it together? Have you looked at a Rome road that you haven't ridden yet but are intending to do? We'd love to see people's creativity with the challenge, because I think it's super, super cool. So as I receive stuff, maybe we'll start a new chat in the Facebook group that people can follow along with, and we can all sort of nerd out on this together. So it's a call out to the map nerds is what it is.
Yeah, because you're absolutely right. And I'm likewise map nerd. And yeah, that's probably why I like Rome so much.
Yeah,
it absolutely. Also feels more like a normal bike ride versus an Everesting.
Yes, I think even on the most scenic Everesting, it still does really distill down to just a physical challenge way, where it's not, I think even if you had a really long ride, it still isn't the adventure that a Rome is. And that's what I wanted to think. And I've been thinking about, like, well, where could I do it? Where does it work? And what do other people do? And I've been looking at the Hall of Fame and seeing where people have done them, and then trying to find some Strava routes accordingly. And I thought, this is definitely a podcast episode.
There's a mountain, I don't know if you've heard of Monte Grappa in northern Italy. So these are road climbs, but there are 7 or 8 ways up that. It's a big mountain. And I wonder whether if you tick them all off, and some of them are savagely steep, but I wonder whether that would get you to 10,000. It may not get you the distance, though. But that's, as you said, that's the beauty of this. You just start thinking, what's possible? Where could you do it?
So that's what we want to put out to the community. Guy, thank you for making the time to do this. I knew you'd be the perfect co-pilot for this topic. So
you're very welcome. Always a pleasure.
I hope we can catch up soon.
Yeah, likewise.
Okay, that'll be it. Thanks, man. It's great to chat with you. It's good to catch up.
Yeah, likewise. Likewise.
Any Hawaii plans in the near future?
Well, no. So my wife and I really want to go back. We were, you know, Maui in the Big Island. We thought that was amazing. But Mauna Loa, I don't know if you realize that, of course, the road just got cut by lava.
Oh, it did.
Yeah.
So yeah. Tom's ride will stand for a while.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
It is amazing. It's a special place. Yeah.
Yeah. It made us dig out all the photos. And we're looking back at the photos going, gosh, that was a really cool place. Imagine, it's one of those bucket lists. If I was retired, I would have booked an air ticket straight away as soon as it started erupting.
Totally. Okay, so as I start to gather information from people about what they've done, maybe we can do a follow-up episode, and I could I'll get some help from one of my kids. Maybe we can put it into the YouTube channel where we could cut up what we're talking about, but actually showing people's a visual what we're talking about, describing. But I think we could do something pretty cool for people.
Yeah, and I'll start doing some research.
Please do. Send me routes. I'm interested. And this is something I would definitely try and figure out a way to travel to do. So,
yeah, no, I agree. And it's more, I mean, the funny thing, it felt easier than a conventional Everesting.
The whole idea of being able to sleep a little bit, I, I, like you, feel like I can go on multi-days and perform pretty well, especially once I warm up. I can't stave off sleep for more. 20 to 24 hours is pretty much where I'm good. It feels, starts to feel a little dangerous, right, to push the sleep more than that. I know some people can physiologically do that better than I can, and that's okay. I'm willing to let that one go and just know my limits. So, but the Rome is pretty cool that way. And I do like the fact that there's a clock a little bit too.
For sure. Because it's the clock that makes you plan it so well.
Yes, exactly. Otherwise it could be, well, I'll take 4 days and I'll take a week off of work and I'll just,
No, I mean, genius rules, actually. Three things, but absolute, because it's not straightforward and it, so therefore it makes you plan it.
Andy, he's visionary. All right, it's great to catch up a little bit. Let's do it again soon, okay?
Okay, good to see you, Pete.
Okay. Take care.
Cheers. Bye.
Thank you, everybody, for spending some of your time with the podcast and downloading it. We really appreciate that. If you're able to subscribe to the show on whatever podcast platform you're finding it, or subscribe to the YouTube channel, which is called Everesting, that helps us grow our audience. There's algorithms to all of these things, and people subscribing and sharing content definitely helps us grow our audience organically. So we really appreciate you doing so. Thank you for tuning in. We have a whole bunch of stuff planned for 2023, both from the podcasting and also just cool news from the Everesting community and the Everesting headquarters. So please stay tuned, and we will be back to you very, very soon.